Welcome to another episode of Adoption, The Making of Me.
I'm Louise Brown.
And I'm Sarah Reinhart.
Make sure to find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as Adoption, The Making of Me podcast.
You can also find us at our website, adoptionthemakingofme.com.
And please remember to subscribe, share, and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. In today's episode, we will be discussing Susan Keogh Itoh's I Would Meet You Anywhere, and then we will be talking to fellow adoptee Lorae.
Hey.
Hey. So wow. We're kind of still processing the whole weekend of Operation Foglift.
Gosh, a weekend, Sarah.
Unbelievably amazing. And we got to see a lot of our Patreons. How great was that?
It was the coolest thing ever. It's funny because when they walk in, you're like, oh, wait, I know you from the screen, from Zoom, right?
Yeah.
But it's instant connection the whole weekend. If you can ever get to one of these events, it's our first event live with a lot of adoptees.
Yeah. I'm still processing, I have to say. I lost my voice and it's kind of starting to come back a bit.
We were saying yesterday, take care of yourself, right? Because it was a lot of great feelings, a lot of emotional feelings. And then leads us into, we have this amazing Patreon group, which is growing with just the coolest people. And the next one's on Saturday, February 17th at 1 p.m. Eastern.
Yes, exactly. If you want to join that soon, if you're at $5 level, you can jump up to $10. Or if you want to just join for the first time, $10. Monthly gets you a monthly Zoom, and it's really great. And then we have other Patreon levels with a mug and t-shirt. We have a lot of merch now. So
yeah, and t-shirt and mug if you're feeling very like, yeah, uh-huh. We give a lot more to the podcast because we need it. We love it.
You know, it keeps us going weekly to do the editing and social media and all that stuff that because we work full-time, we like can't do that. Plus, that's why it sounds so good. Editors.
Right? Editors, thank God.
You don't want me at night, you know, 10 o'clock at night after working full time to try to do all that stuff. Your patronage helps us continue all that on and bringing it to you weekly because it's getting these really important stories out there.
Yeah. And speaking of weekly, we originally went weekly with the help of our sponsor who hosted. He sponsored our happy hour this past weekend.
The
whole weekend. He underwrote a lot of things and we're just indebted to him. And he's going on to do 501c3s now for adoptees. And so S12F, you can look him up in our show notes, of course. And we're open to a new sponsor, any advertisers. We loved our Magic Mind stint we had going, which is great stuff. So if you guys know of anybody or you're someone going, hey, they could promote my business, please tell us.
Exactly. Yeah.
We love it. Yeah. Listen, we'll wear things. We can go back in our closets, wear clothes, whatever you need.
You're speaking a little soon. I don't know that my body can handle the.
We could drive cars.
Actually, I don't have a closet in my little loft.
Right?
I don't have a closet.
We'll have to recreate one.
Yes.
You know.
Basically, my bedroom is a closet. So.
That's what we wanted to talk about today. And please join the Patreon because it's neat.
Yep. And for those who are patrons, we'll see you on the 17th.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Louise. Here we are for two more chapters of I Would Meet You Anywhere by Susan Keogh Itoh. Such a good book.
It's such a good book. We're doing one. The chapters are totaled. And what's the next one? Lucky. How could I forget that?
Lucky. Yeah.
I'm going to get another dog with Gracie and call it Lucky.
Because the dog will be lucky because you adopted it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, those adopters.
I know.
Well, totaled. This book is just... I feel totaled when I read it. I'm like, wow, just right out of the gate. For a few years, my birth mother and I were almost friends.
And then she jumps down and said she'd accepted the fact that she had half siblings who didn't know she existed, one who shared her original name. I just still think about that.
I do too. I do think about it myself. It's like, and just her writing, like she's in a young voice, you know, talking about it. After college, she moved to California, was outside the San Francisco area. Yumi could get down and see her. And it was like, it was the best of times.
Even though, you know, she's seeing Yumi and they're, you know, almost friends, so to speak. Yumi's still really cagey with her, won't talk cagey about the kids, you know, so it's a limited relationship on Yumi's terms.
It really
is. The entire thing is on Yumi's terms.
Yeah. She says it made me, this whole relationship, it makes me acutely aware of the power she holds.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the caginess, and just even, what was the other thing you were talking about earlier? That, oh, it's like when we were discussing this weekend, you're having an affair.
Right.
She's literally having an affair with her mother, because that's why it's so fun too. Because they cuddle under a blanket and go to food and watch a movie and
Doing all these together. Things. That, you know, she talks a lot about, you know, like the certain restaurants. Well, my adoptive parents would never go to this restaurant, or, yeah, you know, and it just being, having to be in a position of the comparing, you know.
And she's so exciting. Yumi's so exciting and always looks so put together. And it is like an affair, though. Like she waits on the doorstep and doesn't really tell her when she's arriving. And it makes me want to read that book, An Affair with My Mother.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, so the whole total is just this hole inside that only that person can fill, and yet they can't, you know?
They can't even fill it. It's like, I don't know that it ever gets filled, right?
And she wants to ask about, you know, everything is off limits. So it's just, once, you know, being that her controlling her life, you know, that...
Yeah, there was something where, I'm not finding it, but she wants to ask her why they're asking questions like, and who's my birth father? But she doesn't do it because she knows that will ruin the moment, ruin the time.
So you're always kind of on tenterhooks in that scenario of not ever really being safe to be yourself, to ask any questions, to know your own life.
Yeah, to know your own life. Just, I mean, and she knows the father. That's what's so crazy. She hasn't offered that information to me.
It's like
they keep in touch. And then the reason it's called totaled is because she gets in a big car accident the day after Yumi has a hangout with her. And then Yumi comes over and is very motherly and loving.
And then she had such complicated feelings because I understood, you know, the sentimentality around that car because her dad had gotten her the car.
Yep,
and,
me too.
You know, and I think it another piece of maybe moving a little bit further apart. And it was very... touching.
Yeah, she said, my daddy got me that car. You know, I actually still drive my father's car, after, like his 2007 Lexus, and I'm attached to it. You know, there's when it goes, it's another piece of what you let go.
Yeah.
And Yumi's comforting her. What was the closing line of that? That was pretty good.
If I could have had this before, I would have driven myself into oncoming traffic years ago.
Exactly. I knew you were going to find that right away, too. I'm like, if I could have had this love from Yumi where she cuddles me after and I'm...
I would have slammed myself into a tree.
That's what I don't think, you know, after being with, you know, all these adoptees when we were in New York, it's just, you, unless you're adopted, you don't get it, right?
Right.
That's just a room full of people who get that. It's just so... I'm sure other people in the world get it for other reasons, but it's just such a thing.
This particular thing you can't get unless you were adopted. It's just there's, you know, you just can't.
Well, so lucky, there's that word. This is an interesting chapter. I was surprised by this chapter.
About the relationship. Yeah. Susan sees a flyer for a play about a birth mother who's given up her child and calls her friend and asks him to go. And he can't go, but he thrusts his roommate upon her, and we end up finding out it's because the roommate is a birth father, which was so interesting.
Which was so interesting. And she said, here's a father who wants to know his child was, the rights were taken from him. The baby was given up for adoption, and he's like very traumatized by the whole thing.
So to him, here's, you know, obviously their attraction was built on other things, you know. A doomed relationship, right? I would have done the same thing if she went back then.
Immediately.
Like, oh my gosh, and gotten enmeshed and codependent. And
Yeah.
All that stuff where you just confusing the feelings with.
And they instantly have this thing, but they don't introduce each other to their friends. They keep holding back. They both have their hold back issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets pregnant.
Which, and, I mean, so for the guy, this is the second situation, scenario in which he got women pregnant. And
so here's an adoptee pregnant before marriage with all her complicated feelings with abortion that's allowed to be had at this. Now we're in a different era.
Mm-hmm.
With a guy who now doesn't want to go through this twice. They're not going to get married, stay together. I mean, this surprised me. You know, this is actually, it was always my fear. So it's like, whoa, she had to deal with some big stuff. And then when she called Yumi, she did call Yumi about it.
And Yumi was really compassionate and understanding.
Yeah.
Which I guess was the person she needed to talk to, but also so odd, you know.
Odd. And then Yumi, the one comment, what did she say? If oh, I didn't that she have would that if choice? She,
if she'd had that option available, she would have taken it, which, you know, of course she wasn't connecting and she didn't, you know, but how painful to have to hear that.
It's very painful. And that brings up the whole subject with adoptees, like when we're used in that whole thing with abortion. It's like, okay, wait, good, bad, or the ugly. It's good she has the right to choose, honestly. But it's weird to hear that from your birth mother.
Right.
Her choice would have been different. But of course, and it was. Look at the pain it threw Yumi into. I mean, this is.
And as Susan said, you know, there's nothing to miss because had I not been born, there wouldn't be a life to miss. So it's a moot point, right? To say, well, aren't, when people do say to adoptees, well, aren't you glad you weren't aborted? No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know any, I wouldn't have been here to know differently. So, and then I did like how she and Paul, you know, the night before the abortion talked through it. You know, they were both devastated. I mean, it's just all those feelings mixed in and.
They went through it together. He's, you know, I liked, he stayed with her through it, held her hand through it. I mean, he's a good guy.
He was able to get past his own trauma and do that.
Because that's not the case for so many women, right? So shout out to Paul, whoever you are out there. I know, it just it made me sad. I was surprised by the turn because she is so young and sweet in her head. Susan,
I mean, at this point, she's in her 20s, right?
Yeah, like, but she's so, there's something so innocent about her. Like, I have to talk to her in person. I can't handle it. I have so many questions, Susan.
Yes. Susan, we'll be talking to you soon about all this. And we just love the book so much.
We love the
book. Yeah, so that was that chapter. And next week, we will be going to I Would Meet You in a Hospital and Long Lost Daughter. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's hard not to blow through this.
It really is hard not to blow through this.
When we traveled, I didn't bring it with me because I was like, nope, I'm not going to, you know, be tempted. So
no, I know, me too. And I, because then I would be rereading anyway to refresh my memory. I have a separate book I'm reading, which is an escapist fiction. So that's helpful.
It is helpful. Well, we have Lorraine coming, so I'm excited about that. She's
She's great. Yes. So I guess I will see you in a minute, Louise.
I'll see you in a minute, Sarah.
Hello. Here we are today with another adoptee. She's coming to us from Tulsa, Oklahoma, not too far from me. Well, ish. Let's welcome Lorraine Gerald. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi, Lorraine.
Hi. Thank you all for having me on today.
So happy to have you.
Yes. Tell us, we know a little bit, tell us for our listeners your story, how you'd like to tell it.
Well, I guess I can just start by the beginning. I'm a baby scoop era, domestic, same race, adoptee, closed adoption.
Like us.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
there were 4 million of us at that time. So
4 million.
Yeah. I didn't know anything growing up. Never had contact with my biological family, just like a lot of baby scoop era adoptees. Didn't have my health history.
Did you know you were adopted? And where were you born? Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for backing up that much. I was born in Knoxville, Tennessee, the University of Tennessee, actually. And I was premature. I was born to a woman that was in college, and my dad had been sent to Vietnam. So very familiar story for a lot of us.
Just like me.
They dated in college. Yeah. Yes, very similar. Yeah. She was almost 20 years old and he was about 21 when I was born. He got sent off to a place he didn't want to be and never knew about me.
Mm.
He was never told. I found him 2.5 years ago and he never knew anything about me. And of course, was like, I would have kept you.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking when you know that you had another family that was never informed, never uh-huh. given an option to take care of you. You were just immediately put into the system.
And were they a couple or was it like more like a get together? Or
I never met her. So okay. I can't ask her, but mm-hmm. according to him, they dated in college and she did list him as the father.
Okay.
I mean, non-identifying information.
Right.
You know, but I mean,
just,
it was.
But just then inform him.
Yes, it was him. I mean, the description of him was him. And that's how I found him, was through the description that she left. So.
But she chose not to inform him for whatever reason.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and we'll never know.
Maybe
what
he'd
reason
been,
that was.
My birth mother couldn't find him. He'd been drafted into Vietnam.
Right.
So she was unable to find him and tell him or anything. So
yeah. And that's probably what happened with me too. But they did date. So I was wondering if she ever got to meet his parents because he said that he did meet her parents.
Oh, okay.
So they were in college in Knoxville?
No, they went to college in South Carolina.
Okay, so how did she?
She went away. she was sent away to have the baby. And for some reason, they picked the University of Tennessee. I don't know why. We've never figured that out either.
Tennessee was a hotbed for adoption.
Sure was.
In that era.
Yeah.
Where were you raised? So you were adopted into a family in Tennessee? Mm-hmm.
Well, I ended up. A month later, I don't have any records of like my first month of life. I don't know what happened to me. There's rumors that University of Tennessee had practice babies. Do y'all know what practice babies
yes,
are?
Yes, we do.
We definitely know what practice babies are.
Yeah. And they just, my records don't exist.
Interesting.
There's just no record of me. There's nothing. Holston Methodist Home has no record of me. There's no record of me. But yet I came from both of those because I have records showing that's where I came from. And I don't like being touched, so I'm pretty sure I got passed around.
I'm sure.
Did you try to get those records unsealed? Like, have you done
oh, yeah.
sort of a law, like with nothing? They will not release them.
Well, they say they don't have anything. Now, my non-identifying records and all the records that the Adoption Agency of Tennessee had, I've paid for, you know.
Right.
Right.
I've paid multiple
pay for those,
times.
Yes.
Yeah, big money both times. And they make you pay for each piece of paper. Last time it was a quarter each piece of paper. Yeah. My records. People don't realize that aren't adopted.
Yes.
The expenses that we have to go through just to find out who we are.
In a situation we never signed up for.
Hmm. Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. That lifelong contract you can't get out of.
Consent. Consent is a big word these days, and yet we were not given no consent. Yeah.
Thank you, because that's what I say all the time. I was put into a lifelong contract without my consent,
exactly.
which is a human rights violation.
I say this all the time, yeah.
Same thing. And people go, well, I'm sorry you had a bad experience. And I'm like, no. You're assuming that I had a bad experience. I didn't say I had a bad experience. What I stated was a fact.
Right.
Human beings being put into a lifelong contract is a human rights violation.
100%
unless you consent to it.
100%.
It doesn't matter the experience. It's taking away your rights. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yes, because I didn't have a bad experience. Mm-hmm. Two things can be true at once. And that's the thing that people forget, that two things can be true at the same time. My adoptive parents were loving, but they were lied to. They were said, that baby's a blank slate. You just take it and do whatever.
Yeah.
And they did the right thing by telling me that I was adopted. And they said, we love you and we support you with whatever you want to do. These were all good things, but there was no action behind it.
Right.
It was, that's how it is. It's like, well, okay, are you going to help me?
No, it's the same. You're told, but then that's the end of the conversation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And the support isn't there. So then right. now in my 50s, right. I know y'all know this. This mm-hmm. is a similar story, right? We have to go do these things, mm-hmm. get our mental health care help, do searches, whatever we want to do, and then deal with it on our own
right.
later.
And really few resources, right? We didn't right. have many therapists still aren't really still. Trained in, oh, in yeah. adoption trauma, relinquishment trauma.
I've trained therapists, trust me.
Yeah.
I have literally trained therapists going to them and telling them which books to read and things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, so we're kind of like left flailing, especially when you do hit your 50s and you realize, like, I mean, at least in our anecdotal experience of, you know, 100 or so interviews that we've done, often it isn't till this age when it kind of catches up. And
something about it, it just opens yeah. up everything.
Yeah. I even had a therapist tell me once I had made the statement that adoptees don't tell our adoptive parents how we're feeling. And we don't go around telling just the general public,
right.
especially when we're younger.
No, you and don't
she,
at all.
She it's not like safe to do so.
Right. She looked at me and said, well, my best friend adopted some children and I would know if there was issues. I might as well. God. And she said this, I kid you not. She said, I might as well just go flip burgers.
Oh
and I
God.
Said, well,
yeah, you really
said,
should,
you
lady.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I said, at least you'd be doing something that was beneficial to society because what you're right. doing now is not. And she literally, this was a therapist I went to that knew I was an adoptee, told me she was trauma-informed, and then she's turning it all around on me.
Gaslighting.
Yeah.
It was one of the worst experiences I'd ever had. By the end of that therapy session, I wanted to actually harm that woman. I had to leave and scream in my car for a while. I mean, it was horrible. And that's what people also don't understand as adoptees, even when we go to get help. This is what we're met with a lot of times.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the consciousness of, it's so baked in that yes. adoption is such a wonderful altruistic thing that benefits everybody. Nothing else is considered. It's really astounding.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure you all have heard all the things on social media. They just tell you to, well, I know they have told me to straight shut up.
Yeah.
when I'm talking about. Yeah. They come on my pages and tell me to shut up.
Yeah.
When I'm talking about my lived experience and actual mm-hmm. science and facts.
Well, the adoptees are the last. They're the last to be asked, honestly. I mean, it's not, no one wants to hear from the population that's affected by it.
I think there needs to be some big class action lawsuits before things start to, you know, public awareness.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting what you said, because you don't tell, like I tell Sarah so much more than I tell other people about because she's safe, right? You don't tell your, even my closest friends, I do tell them now that we're more open about this and everything, but even then you can see a little bit of disconnect with it. And so, you know, you go
or
so
everyone
far.
Has an adoptive friend. Well, you know,
I'm the adopted friend. I am the adopted friend that people go, she had the best experience, right?
And so I had a friend recently say, you know, so-and-so was adopted and he feels like he was really lucky. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, he hasn't really examined everything yet.
And you can be both. Like Ray said, like I'm kind of that. I think I'm one of those people that people would point to and say, because, you know, I did have a loving home. I did have loving parents who I loved and different things, right? Whatever the perfect adoption can look like, right?
Right.
Nothing's perfect, but they would use me as that, and that bothers me. It's like because no one asks me.
Right.
I don't know how to explain that, but you can be both.
And you can feel lucky, but still understand the trauma and the human rights violations.
I'm still dealing with all of this stuff. I mean, yes. You can't go and change people's birth certificates. Like if we go to prison if we tried that, right?
Right.
But here, let me just.
Yeah, when I got
health history.
Yeah. Right.
Every human should have access to their health history.
Or
my
know who they
had
are.
Breast cancer twice for years and never told me.
Yeah.
I mean, she just flat rejected me.
Did your adoptive parents have any other kids?
No, I was an only child.
You were an only child. And were you close to them?
See, this one is kind of, it's hard to talk about because I don't know if we had a real relationship or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I didn't feel the same way that I thought other people felt. I would look at other families and
about their parents.
There, right. And I'd be like, wow, they're really close and stuff.
Yes.
And I did not feel like that. I mean, I loved them in a way, but it was forced. Like I said, there wasn't a truth to it. I was given no choice to be in that relationship. I was told, these are your parents, you love them, whether you right. do or not. That's what it was. So when people ask that question, I say, yes, I love them, but was it a real relationship? Because we never really talked about any of these issues or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was superficial at best.
Are they both deceased now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to talk about them like they're bad people, because again, they were lied to
yeah.
also. They weren't given, neither one of them got help for their trauma. Father was a vet. My father was a vet. He drank every day of his life. He was not a mean drunk. He was a functioning drunk, but he numbed out after he got home from work every day. My mom had so many surgeries. She had a forced hysterectomy. That's why she couldn't have children. Forced hysterectomy.
That's a horrible, horrible
yeah.
thing.
Mm-hmm. And so she had that. She ran away from home. I mean, she had abusive ex-husbands. She had trauma. She had multiple surgeries. She took lots of pills. Pharmaceuticals from the doctor. So she numbed out too. They never got help for their own trauma. So instead of us having a real relationship, what was it?
You were the help for their trauma.
Right. I was the Band-Aid for their trauma.
Right.
They never addressed it. They just passed it on. And people hear me say those things and they're like, you're all against adoption, everything. I'm against adoption for Band-Aids. We are not commodities to help your trauma. No.
Right.
I'm 100% against that. You're absolutely right. But child-centered adoption that is actually child-centered? No, I'm not against that. I'd prefer guardianship, I'll be honest.
I don't think adoption is necessary. I don't think so either.
I don't think it's necessary.
There's not a reason to have to change someone's entire name, identity, erase their past, keep them away, you know. I talk about a friend of mine is a CASA, and I now can no longer talk to her about it. People just have this thought that it's all about financial stuff. So
yes,
I can't even talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
But
my adopted parents were poor. Both of my biological families had far more means and opportunities.
That's why you were sent
family.
Away. That's why your birth mother was.
That's exactly why, because that would have been shame brought upon their name.
Mm.
So I got all the shame of my birth mother. She never dealt with it. That was passed down to me. And my adopted parents never dealt with their trauma. That was passed down to me. I'm breaking it.
Isn't it incredible when you think about those circumstances? Like, my situation was fine until my parents got divorced, and then my mom left and we were left with my dad, who just didn't have the emotional capacity as a 30-year-old guy with four kids under the age of seven. So thinking of those circumstances as you grow up and you don't have anybody to talk to about your feelings and you stuff down, you feel lonely and alone and it's scary.
Isolated.
It really is incredible that we're functioning adults of any capacity.
Right. I feel like we're functioning because we're survivors. Like there's a...
we are. That's what I was going to say.
The PTSD. Like I always feel like I seem calm on the surface, but I'm very PTSD underneath. Like what's going to happen? It's that anxiety.
Sympathetic nervous system.
We all have that anxiety.
Yeah. Well, and that's because of the relinquishment. I mean, that's just physiology of the human nature. Everybody can say whatever they want, but that's the truth. You know, when we were separated from our birth mothers, our nervous system did what it does.
Mm-hmm.
It naturally went into activation, fight, flight. The baby is traumatized and it's preverbal. So until you can find your words and come out of the fog or become conscious, however you want to say it, I don't want to offend people. When you become okay with dealing with the pain, when you can sit and be uncomfortable with the pain and acknowledge it for what it is, it's going to stay stuck in there.
Mm-hmm. And even still, you know, the healing is do we ever really heal? I mean, I think so too. I don't know that it's really possible to heal that.
Not CPTSD.
No, I don't think so.
My biological mom, I have some new letters and I was sharing with Sarah. One of them, she puts in there, she's writing letters after she relinquished me. And she was with me for 6 days. I always thought it was two or three, 6 days before she goes to the court. And she says, the doctor, so-and-so, so helpful. And they really, you know, they made me see that I don't have anything to give but my love. And she'll now have the means. I mean, these are words from adults to a young person, right? The means and a father. She needs a good father. That was her big thing. But it was also like, I don't have, and she must have said it three times, I don't have anything to give but my love. And I'm thinking, what do they, it's so nut. Like looking, you know, reading that and just what you're saying.
The cognitive dissonance with adoption is just, I just sit there and shake my head sometimes. I'm like,
I know.
Okay, so the birth mother goes from loving the baby so much to giving her away to someone else. And then the baby has to reconcile that they were loved so much that they were given away for people that loved the baby more because
they had, right,
because means. In my case, they were that married. Wasn't even real.
Well, because they were married.
Straight
white married couples. Let's exactly. Be yeah. That's the ideal.
I was going to say,
my parents too didn't, you know, they were just like a young 23-year-old.
Yeah,
which
my
is
parents
also,
didn't have
no offense,
then.
Mom, if you're listening, it is baffling that, you know, a 23-year-old couple would be given a baby. Again, Mom, no offense, because she does listen.
Right.
It's just kind of baffling.
It's a social thing, and they were married. It's a social construct. My parents didn't have the means back then. They came to later, but they were married. They had a son in the house, right? Someone else isn't married. That's not a suitable mother out in public.
Yeah. Right. How do you then navigate life? So you live in this couple who is checking out. They're emotionally unavailable. And you're by yourself, so no siblings. Like, how do you navigate this? How did you live in your world?
I just took care of myself. Lately, I've been seeing this thing, and I don't know if this is true for a lot of people that are our age, but I was almost kidnapped 2 times as a child, and I never even told my parents. That's the kind of thing that, you know that there's something wrong. You don't go to your parents and go, hey, these people in a van tried to get me today and I ran away from them.
Yeah.
And you don't even bother telling them.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to sound bad to adopted parents and stuff, but these are the things that truthfully happen that we don't tell you. So if we're not going to tell you that we almost got kidnapped twice in my case by the same people, how can I go about telling you that I may not have the same feelings for you that you have for me? How could a child grasp that conversation? There's just no way to sit down. I don't even know if they were alive today, how I would go about having that conversation. I would do it. But it's so difficult. Adults can barely have that conversation when, you know, they're in their own relationships. They would rather just be in a bad relationship than have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality of just basically I buried everything, every feeling, everything. It didn't matter. I just knew that things were wrong. So I had to be the best there ever was. I just made myself the best that ever was. In first grade, I was the only kid at that time. I'm sure it probably has happened then. I made 100% on the achievement test. They wanted to skip me a grade. My parents wouldn't let me. I'm still mad about that one. That was wrong. I hope you hear that. They should have skipped me. They finally, in third grade, they had split levels and they put me in those third, fourth, fifth, sixth, because I was very fast. I would finish all my work and then I'd just be sitting there staring at the teacher and they'd be like, yeah, we got to do something with her, you know? So they finally let me go do band or library or extracurriculars. I won the Presidential Physical Fitness Award. Jimmy Carter signed it. Yep, that's how old I am, because I got that in 12th grade.
You're sort of a model adoptee for adoption.
Yes, and I don't want to be that poster child.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, that's what's interesting.
Exactly. That's what I was shy. I was quiet. I never said anything. Again, these were trauma responses that were not noticed. Everybody was like, look, she's perfect. She never cries. Perfect. She never says anything. Even as a baby, I didn't cry or anything. Warning sign.
Right.
Warning sign.
That was me too. Yeah.
That's a good baby.
Yeah, that's what I was told. She's a good baby. She never does anything. She just sits there. And I'm like, I tried to escape multiple times. And I remember these memories. I had braces on my feet, and I had a little red bar with my two white boots because I was pigeon-toed when I was born, and this held my feet out. I'm showing them. I know y'all can't see this, but my feet were held in these boots with a bar, and they were pointed outwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember squirming on my belly, trying to escape, trying to get away. I was less than 2 years old when I wore these things. I remember trying to escape my crib as a child. I remember my parents having to put locks and stuff. This was, you know, back before people realized these things. I would get out. They had gates up. And again, I know this seems logical nowadays, but these things weren't as logical because we were in an upstairs apartment and I would try to go down the stairs. I was trying to get out. I mean, I remember these specifically because I was terrified. I didn't feel like I was safe. And it wasn't because, again, not because they were bad people. They were loving people. I just knew that that wasn't where I was supposed to be.
And you're not safe.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you're not where you belong. It's
right. I always felt like I
belong. It's not the right place. Like,
right. I thought it was a mistake. I really did. I convinced myself that my parents were going to come get me. And it was, I still have physical reactions every Christmas because I thought Christmas was so magical. If I prayed hard enough, I would get my family every Christmas. And my birthday is right after Christmas. My birthday is January 3rd. I just had a birthday. Every year, Christmas and my birthday, I would just go, they're going to come this year, my birthday or Christmas,
you know, one
or the other. Yeah, it's a mistake. They're going to come find me. One of them's going to come find me. Yeah.
Did your parents tell you anything about your...
They didn't know anything.
Nothing.
And were you raised in Tennessee or...
Yes, Johnson City, Tennessee, right where it touches Virginia and North Carolina up in the mountains. I still love being in the mountains. And I found out my biological father grew up in those same mountains in North Carolina.
Yeah, we're drawn.
So you go through life waiting for, you know, and just kind of living this existence
someday
I'm going to achieve, I'm going to be perfect. Someday I'm going to find my family. You get through your teenage years. You were obviously a model adoptee, as you just said.
Then I switched. Yeah, I was perfect. And then I realized that that didn't get me anywhere. So I went the whole opposite way.
So how old was that?
I was the hellion. I was the partier, the drinker, the person that got in trouble, got home, you know, by the police and stuff because I was drunk. Yeah, I numbed out because being perfect and smart didn't help anything. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, well, I might as well fit in with the cool kids.
I did that too.
Yeah. Same.
I just wanted attention. I just wanted to feel like I belonged to something. That was it. And I couldn't find it. And of course, because none of it was real.
I just wanted groups to love me. Like,
yeah,
me a too. Group to love me.
I still do. I know that I have to love myself and I do love myself, but there's a part of me that honestly, that still wants that. I want to feel connected. I want people to love me. And, you know, it's just because of that. As a child, the disconnect.
I was just like going to say it is, you know, that feeling of disconnection.
Lifelong.
Right. It's a pretty prevalent, hard thing to shake.
Yeah.
It's a safe.
Even though we're told to get over it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sit in
the uncomfortable. Y'all don't know how trauma works.
Right.
Just sit with it and just be lonely with it.
Yeah. That's it. You just have to eventually come to the realization that you have to love yourself. You have to find the safe space in yourself. That's why I teach Kundalini yoga. I found the safe space within myself in the quiet.
Yeah.
And just letting it be what it is, the dark and the light, accepting it both, being non-judgmental and, you know, just being, you know, we've all got both sides.
Yeah, we do. What was the course of your life So when did you begin a search and like what happened? Where'd you go? You leave your home, your adoptive home.
In 1995, state of Tennessee said, oh, adoptees, we're going to go ahead and let you get your non-identifying information. I'm like, oh, goody. So I filled out all the paperwork and, you know, they wanted $150.10 piece of paper back then. Of course, I was in college and bartending. I didn't really have that kind of money. So I told them I didn't have that money. And they said, well, show us your pay stubs. So I did.
Really?
And I got it down to $50. Yeah. I got a decrease and I got the paperwork. I went through it, said the search is ended. Here's your non-identifying information. And I was like, search. My brain didn't connect that they had searched for my birth mother. That one didn't connect until many years later.
Yeah.
But they gave me my non-identifying information. And in there was my actual birth certificate with my birth mother's name on it and my first name.
They made a mistake.
My original name before Lorraine.
What was your name?
Julia Vera James.
That's pretty.
And guess what? Nobody knows what that means either. Even though every name on my mother's side of the family means something, my name means nothing. And I was like, just something else that she left for me to wonder about.
Mm.
So they said the search ended.
Right. And I got that. So my adoptive cousin happened to be in Richmond, Virginia, and that's where my birth mother was. Long story. We'll go into that in a book or something someday. But she ended up finding where my birth mother's business was. My birth mother owned her own business, and she went in there. And when she walked in, there was a woman, and she said, looked exactly like you.
Wow.
She goes, I didn't even have to ask who your mother was. She goes, that's how apparent it was.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't talk to her then because it was her business. She felt that wouldn't be right. So she did call her later and asked if she could speak to her and told her, you know, that I was looking for her. And my birth mother's response was, if she even tries to find me, I will get a restraining order because I don't want my husband's or daughter's to know.
Wow.
Now, those daughters were my sisters, and the husband she was talking about had been dead for 4 years. So she had no one except my sisters that she was hiding me from. My biological grandmother, her mother, was still alive, and she knew too, because later I found in my paperwork from Tennessee that they thanked my grandmother for speaking to them. So she's the one who sent them away. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. They both. And I'm sure my grandfather, too, all three of them made me go away. I never had a grandparent because of them. I had eight grandparents, never got to meet one of them because of those two or my birth mother. I was completely erased from the family.
I was born in 66. But what year did?
Oh, 95 was, it was, I think it was 96 or 97 when
that
my
adoptive
cousin.
They went into the store. Okay.
Right. Yeah. It was 96, I'm pretty sure.
A restraining order. I mean, geez.
And I found out later that my birth mother had breast cancer at the time and knew I was looking and decided not to tell me.
Mm. And how old was she? She was not old.
Sisters were, you know, like me. They were in their early 20s because I was in my later 20s at that time, mid to late 20s. So they were like 21, 23, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So they were adults. My youngest sister was getting married at that time, I found out later, because I was like, we were trying to figure out why would she not talk to me? And we were looking at that time frame and she goes, well, she had breast cancer at that time. I was getting married. And I said, that's still not an excuse. I'm sorry.
So you've met your sisters.
Oh, yeah. I found them. I found my whole family.
So what was the trajectory? Did you kind of walk away from it after that?
Oh, yeah.
For a minute?
Yeah.
And then
I had to forget what she said. And my brain did a really good job of erasing that memory because I didn't remember it all until 2020 when I had reunion in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2020, I was like, I wonder if there's any more paperwork. So I asked my cousin again. I said, what did you say my birth mother said? And when she said it, my whole brain felt like it exploded. I was like, how did I not remember that? Because I had literally erased that memory. It was too painful. And that's when I kind of went into a spiral for a while.
Sure.
And kind of lost it because I realized that if my brain could lie to me about that, what else could it lie to me? And I lost my grasp of reality for a little bit.
Mm. Oh, Lori. Yeah. Those are harsh words.
Oh, the balloons just went out. That's so weird.
That was the weirdest thing ever, but okay.
It was giving me a little love because it was
love.
A really hard time.
Just for the listener, we had balloons fly across the screen. That was interesting.
So it was 2019. So you just all that time after getting your non-identifying, after your cousin going into the store, mm-hmm. you just kind of stopped?
No, I had written some letters
mm-hmm.
and I had made some phone calls and left voicemails.
For your mother.
After I'd had a few drinks, you know.
Yeah.
Just enough to get the numbing in without being slobbery drunk. Yeah. I would call her and go, hi, this is Julia. or I'd say, hi, this is Lorray. You may remember me as Julia, because I didn't even know she remembered me. Think about that. Yeah. I was like, I don't know if she remembers me. Maybe I need to remind her so we can talk. Yeah, your brain does weird things when you're adopting and you're trying to contact a mother that won't talk to you. Mm. Yeah, you go a little bit crazy.
Did she eventually talk to you?
No, never.
Never.
She ignored every single time. She died of breast cancer in 2016.
Mm. Oh, she did.
How did you finally get involved with your sisters?
I was on 23andMe. Mm-hmm. And there was a cousin, because, you know, there's always cousins in there when you
right,
first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had put my little bio. I was adopted, you know, looking for my family. And this lovely lady said, hey, cousin. And I was so excited. First biological family member to ever talk to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, my God. She's telling me about the family. And I'm like, that doesn't sound right. Doesn't sound right at all. So anyway, but I was drawn to her. And I said, well, I know we're connected. Look, it's right there. DNA don't lie, right? Mm-hmm. People do. DNA doesn't. So I was like, well, we're related, but that doesn't sound right. So I was like, maybe we're just distant cousins and there's not really much of a relation. So I kind of let it go. We messaged, I think, a few times. And then it was about a year later, she messaged me again and said, go to Ancestry and do your DNA there. Guess what? I'm adopted. Oh. So the family she was telling me about was her adopted family. She was an LDA. They lied to her.
Oh, my God.
So her and I were related. She wasn't related to her family. So when I did my Ancestry DNA, yes, we were related on my dad's side. And I was like, okay, the mystery man, her dad and I were related. Her brother and I, we were all starting to get closer here. We were like, okay, we're narrowing this down.
You have another adoptee you're going through this with. That's interesting.
Yeah, an LDA too.
Yeah, wow, she's like, whoa.
That must have been harsh for her.
Oh, yeah. That's her story to tell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was going back through Ancestry and all of these things. I was back in there again. And this ad pops up and goes, hey, for $30, we'll give you obituaries. And I'm like, well, yeah, take my money. You know, it's just money. Take it all. So I'm in there putting the credit card in again, buying some more stuff, looking at obituaries. And there it is. My birth mother's obituary.
Oh.
And in the obituary, for the first time, I saw my sister's names.
You saw their names. That's how I found
out. They had not done any DNA.
Mm-mm. No, they did it when I contacted them, because of course I went through social media and messaged a month later, didn't hear anything. I thought, well, but I know messages get lost unless you're friends.
Unless you're friends. Yes.
Right. So I was like, I knew enough about this. I was like, don't go freaking out, Lorray. You know, it could be that. It could be that. Let's not assume things. So one of them had their own business. So I emailed them. And I knew that it would go to their email because it was their business. Week later, I was like, wow, either they really don't check their own business email or, wow, nobody wants to know you on that side of the family. And so I had been in the Facebook private adoptee groups, you know, the ones that are private, where we can talk, where the public doesn't see us.
Yeah.
Boo-hooing. I was literally, it was the first time I'd talked because I had been so shy. I had just been lurking pretty much, listening and learning from all of these adoptees, you know, what's going on. And I finally said, well, I guess I've been rejected. And that afternoon, I heard from them the same day. And they said, can we Zoom? And I said, yes, we can. I don't have Zoom. And at that point, I didn't know much about it. I said, what's Zoom? Okay.
I'll find it. Zooming. I'll figure it out.
I was like, I'll figure it out. I'm tech enough. I can do this. So, yep, figured it out and talked to him. They didn't know anything about me.
So the two of them, so the one that you wrote the business wanted to talk to her sister, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. She said, go look in your messenger. And they both searched their messenger and found it. And I had sent my birth certificate because I said, I don't want y'all thinking I'm some lunatic. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, that's it. I mean, look, it's right there.
And you look just like your...
Yeah. And of course, when they looked at me on Facebook, they were like, oh, yeah, that's definitely our sister. They were like, I don't think we need DNA at this point. But they did it anyway, just because they were curious, too. And to honestly, they both told me that they thought it was their dad. When they found out it was their mother, they completely went, no, that can't be possible. And then they had to go through their own trauma of going, who is our mother? Because this doesn't make sense.
This doesn't match with her.
Right. She was a leader in the community. People looked up to her. She never had a day of depression. She wasn't an addict.
Well, this is why she didn't want you to blow up in her world.
Right. Because, yeah, exactly.
So were they welcoming? And do you still have a relationship with them? And
I have a relationship with one of them. The other one rejected me. We did meet. I'll give her that. We did meet. And then she decided that because the way I felt that, no, she didn't want a relationship with me because she couldn't hear the way I was talking about her mother. Mm. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So then your father?
My father is in a nursing home and alone. He's a Vietnam vet and all alone. Mm. And we do video chat when I can get the nursing home to do that.
Get him on. Yeah.
Did he have other kids?
Yes. I have one other sister by him. She's very nice, but we don't really have a relationship besides Facebook. We did meet. She has three kids. She's a teacher. She's a busy mom. And she even said once, I wish we were closer so maybe we could have a relationship. But she didn't reject me, but she hasn't made efforts.
She's just chaotic in her life, probably.
Right. Right. And to be honest, she did not have a relationship with her father.
Oh, okay.
I mean, so, that Vietnam PTSD is...
Right. He was an alcoholic.
Yeah. My father, same thing, and ultimately killed himself.
Yeah.
Well, mine almost did. They found him on the floor, and he had had strokes, and he was pretty much dead. And his daughter, they called her, and she said, well, revive him. And here's the weird thing. He had that stroke like 2 months before I had written a letter. That letter sat there for a year. His stepdaughter, because he was married to a woman for like 20 years and she ended up having Alzheimer's, and that woman went to another facility. He was alone, had the stroke. Someone found him, you know, got him help. That letter sat there while he was rehabilitating. A year later, my stepsister emails me and goes, hey, I found this letter. Are you still looking for, you know, Ken? And I said, yeah. And I emailed her back, told her why. And she was like, oh, my God. She was like, oh, I'm going to do everything to get you to him. And she's the one that got me hooked us up, because she said that her father was, I can't remember if he was adopted or abandoned, but she said, I'm doing this for my dad and you.
Mm.
And she did. She made it happen. But
good for her.
Yeah. If she'd have gotten that letter when I originally wrote it, I wouldn't have been able to talk to him because he was so bad off. It took him so long to come back, but he came back from it.
Oh, so he's like, you're able to have conversations and.
Yeah. I mean, he's not in great shape.
How did he feel about knowing about you?
Well, she said, yeah. Didn't you say he would have kept you? And
yeah. Oh, he was shocked at first. And I said, I'm going to be in North Carolina in a couple of days. I said, if you want to see me, I will come see you. I was visiting someone else and I said, I will come there. And he got the nursing home to call me and said, come see me. Mm. And so I took pictures of my birth mother, walked in there. Whew, this one's, I can still feel the physical sensations of this. And I know you all know these when you first meet your biological parent. Oh man, my palms are sweating. I walked in, was waiting for him. They wheeled him in because he's in a wheelchair. And I gave him those pictures. And when he looked down at him, the expression on his face was, oh, yeah, he definitely knows that woman. Mm. And the energy, you could just feel him going, oh, like going back in time almost. Mm-hmm. I could literally feel him going back in time. And it definitely looked like he either was in love or heavily infatuated or something with her, because the look on his face. You just don't fake that.
No.
Wow. What a story. This is so layered and so much.
It's really still ongoing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing with us and coming on and I'm kind of processing. I feel like we could talk for a lot longer, but I'm really happy we got to talk for the time that we did.
It was more of a conversation.
I got to talk to you all too.
I liked that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your podcast is so important, getting voices out, and your voices are so needed and appreciated. Thank you all.
And yours too, coming on and saying your truth about everything. It's important because it's hard. I think it's hard for people to hear, and there's probably adoptees listening that's hard for them to hear, but it's another thing that makes your brain go, let me wrap my brain around some of this, right?
Right. Yeah.
And, I still have that.
Yeah. And we have to let people know that, you know, like we said, more than one thing can be true at the same time. So you can actually be grateful for your adopted parents. You can love them, whatever, but you can also see what adoption is now and the harm it's causing. And babies are literally being sold.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's human rights violations.
Yes, 100%.
And it's rooted in human trafficking.
Yeah, I just saw an ad today on Twitter. Someone reposted it. You're going away to jail. Let us do you a favor.
Let us take your baby.
Yeah. Let us take your baby.
It was an ad. It was so
weird. Yes, it was an ad. Yeah, and that's legal. They can put ads out for babies. But yet, if you try to talk about the trauma, I unfortunately had an adopted mother. She came into my DMs months ago, and we've been having this back and forth. And she absolutely does not believe that a baby bonds with the biological mother. And I'm like, she goes, the baby bonds with the caregiver. And I'm like, no, the baby attaches to the caregiver and bonds with the mother.
Yes.
And she goes, well, they're synonymous. Those words are the same. And I'm like, no, they're not. And I mean, it wasn't just me. A lot of adoptees tried to tell her that. And she said she has lots of adoptees in her family. And I'm like, please, someone become trauma-informed in that family for the sake of that family.
Right.
Not to be mean to that family, to support that family. But she thinks I'm being mean to her. And I have never been mean to her. Every time I'm like, please, read this, look at this. And she's like, no. My children are fine. And then she sends me their pictures. I'm like, no, don't send me your children's pictures.
Oh my God.
So let's all hope that this woman gets the support she needs.
Yeah.
All right, Lorraine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Please stay in touch with us.
Yes, please.
Yes. And hey, come to one of my yoga classes sometime.
Oh, yes. Send us the info. And if you
want to do Kundalini on Sundays and Wednesdays.
And then if you want us to put that in our show notes so that listeners
absolutely
want to come, we'll do that. So send us all that information.
That's how we live with our trauma.
Well, exactly. I practice yoga.
We do too.
And it is really one of the links. Okay, that sounds good. Thank you so much. So nice to meet you.
Thanks, Lorraine.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, that's Sam. Hi, Sam. Saying hello.
Hi, Sam. We don't have to stop recording.
That's Sam, our little visiting Sam.
Our dogs understand when our Zooms wrap up, and Sam seems to understand. He was sorry to see Lorraine go.
He was. I'm sorry to see Lorraine go. She's the adopted chameleon on socials.
Yeah.
We just said, and it's neat, but nowhere now.
Yes.
The face with the posts. Anyway, I enjoyed that conversation.
I did too. That was a really good, deep, enriching conversation. Deep.
I feel like my mind's like, you have to kind of process now.
Yes. Yes. And well, Louise.
What do we say?
You tell me.
Another great episode, Sarah.
Another great episode.
See you next time.
See you next time. Thanks so much for listening today.
And remember, if you'd like to share your stories or suggest any guests for our show, you can find us on all the socials at the Making of Me podcast.
And again, we have a Patreon page so that we can continue to bring these great adoption stories to you. So if you want to find that and donate or contribute in any way, find us at patreon.com searching adoption: The Making of Me.
Bye.
See you next time.